welcome to episode 41 of the Pirate Monk Podcast. Coming to you live from high above the Mellow Mushroom here in Franklin, Tennessee, and simultaneously from the opposite side of the continent there on America's left coast at Studio B in San Luis Obispo, California. I'm Nate Larkin here with Mondo and a special guest soon to be introduced. And joining us from San Luis, Admiral Aaron Porter and his guest soon to be introduced.
Yes, indeed. Now, who's Studio A today?
Ooh.
Oh, that's
yeah. I was going to say it's kind of a push. We got guests in both places.
Yeah, but I think moms are Trump.
Mm.
Really, nothing personal.
I thought of three things to say, and they all got filtered. So you know how bad that was. It was like bam, bam, bam. Nope.
Is that so just because we have a mother?
A. No, I already blew that one.
Yeah. Mondo, introduce us to your mom.
Well, everybody, this is my mother, Vivian Weaver. She is down here visiting in Nashville, spending some family time, getting with the grandkids and myself. But of course, I think as we all know, once you have grandkids, once you have kids, the grandparents tend to ignore you.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's all about the grandkids. So, I think we got a little.
That's true.
Yeah. So you know, so she's here spending time with the family, and she leaves this evening. So.
All right. Well,
she's a fan of the podcast, yeah. Though.
Seriously?
Yeah, man. Yeah, she. I mentioned it to her a while ago that I was we were doing it, and I was engineering and stuff like that. And, then she told me something. I was laughing one day about the podcast. I didn't know you were listening to it.
Oh.
So yeah, she's been listening, man. She's been checking it out and. You know, hearing all our craziness and the banter and everything else.
So, Vivian, as a woman,
yes.
Like, I'm always curious,
yes.
Do women listen to this hoping to get some secrets about guys? Or what? Why would a woman listen to this other than the fact that her beautiful baby boy is on?
Well, that was the first intention. But the other reason is my husband is an elder. And between him and myself, we do a lot of counseling. So we see a lot of this, these issues come through us. So it's just interesting for me to be able to relate some of the stories and maybe introduce them to the broadcast. So basically that's kind of what drew me to it because, you know, we have these issues that are brought to us.
So how have some of your perspectives changed after hearing some of the stories that are on here?
Well, I'm personally very open-minded, and I do understand that these things exist. Having a program like this to help people through is awesome. We're all human. We're going to have, you know, we all have our issues. But it's not saying one's worse than the other. But in this particular issue, I know that it's serious. And I think, and maybe it's because I didn't know statistics some while ago, I do think that it's more of an issue now than at least that was brought to us than it had been in the past. And that is the part that, you know, I would like to get answered. You know, why do you think that it's more of an issue now or appears to be more of an issue now than years before?
Oh, Nate, I think you want to take that one?
I think you tossed it back. Yeah, if we're talking about, we're talking about addiction in general and maybe
sex-related
stuff, porn stuff, sex stuff in particular. Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that our culture has been increasingly sexualized.
Right.
And what used to be regarded as adult entertainment, what used to be concealed from the kids... Has now really filtered into even kid culture. You look at what our preteen boys and girls are being exposed to. It's pretty clear they're highly sexualized. And this is the internet generation. My grandkids when they were 2 years old, they had computers in their bedrooms.
Hmm.
And the average
age. They could type 70 words a minute.
No, that's
I don't know how this happened.
Well, I do have gifted grandchildren. There's no doubt about that. But the fact that this is now an ordinary appliance, it's hard for me to understand for me to remember. There's an entire generation of kids for whom the internet has always just been a part of their lives.
Yeah, they don't know any different.
Right, exactly. And so the average first exposure to pornography has plunged dramatically. It's now like down around 7.
Oh, is that low now?
7, yes.
Wow, that messes with brain development right
now. Long before the brain is fully formed, kids are exposed to the highly addictive chemicals that come from sexual arousal.
Nate, you got to... it was weird. I took... gentleman Ben Barzi, who you know.
I do.
Down to L.A.
Speaking of seven-year-olds,
where I used to live.
No, I'm...
Say again.
Go ahead. I just insulted Ben, but you talked over it and it doesn't matter. Go ahead.
We had to go down to where I used to live in Los Angeles when I was... moved down there when I was 17. And we were driving through places, and it became like the tour of the first places I ever looked at pornography.
Oh, yeah.
And he was just baffled by, you had to actually go out and humiliate yourself. And I remember there was a liquor store I could drive about 5 minutes, and driving 5 minutes in L.A. ensures you're not going to see anybody you know.
Right.
But this guy, when I would, like, you know, I'm humiliated, I'm a kid, but, I want to get my fix.
Right.
And this guy at the counter would always look through the magazine and talk about how beautiful the women were and don't I think it's worth more than the $6 I'm spending. And I was, like, talk about heaping humiliation on humiliation, but because I didn't want to find another place to go, I would always go back there and be humiliated.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Ben, being a 26-year-old who has no reference for having to be humiliated to get your fix, was mortified. Like, he would never go, you know, nobody would ever get into this unless you're as bad as you, clearly, if you had to go through that. So I think that's the biggest piece is just accessibility and being able to be anonymous.
Yes.
Because you got to be a pretty desperate teen to go humiliate yourself like that.
Accessibility, anonymity, and affordability. The fact that that pornographers very cleverly, they know that the largest group of consumers for pornography are males age 12 to 19 who don't have money. But if they'll get hooked at that early age, they'll be customers for life. So there are tons and tons and tons of free porn. We have yet to see the full extent of the catastrophic damage caused by the sexualization of our culture. But it is alarming, and you don't have to be a prude or a Puritan or some kind of, you know, person so narrow-minded you can see through a keyhole with both eyes in order to acknowledge this as a cultural plague.
Right, right. I think that's, for my parents especially, a remarkable thing, being leaders in a church, being willing to expose themselves and learn more by listening to podcasts like this, and getting a real life practical understanding of the real deal, just, you know, browbeating people in counseling sessions with what the word says, you know what I mean, and the fact that, you know, they've always been, I think, trendsetters in that way, where they've always been outside the box in how they counsel.
That's awesome.
You know what I mean, and even for her openly to admit right here,
hey,
this is helping us talk to people.
This is
helping us counsel people and work with people. So we need more people like that.
We sure do.
You know, especially those in church leadership.
So beautiful baby boy, bringing people in to get some healing.
That's Mondo, building the podcast audience one listener at a time.
Yes. In another 9 months, I'll have one more.
It's like having a baby.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for this first section, but we will be right back on the Pirate Monk podcast.
Yo ho, a pirate's life for me.
And we're back on the Pirate Monk Podcast. Boy, it's been a busy week. I know, Aaron, you've been going 90 miles an hour. Did you make it to a meeting this week?
No, I was out of town last week, first at a Transformation Ministry pastors conference where we got to promote our big 48 Hours of Frankness for pastors, which is coming up in January.
Oh, January, I'm excited about that.
24th, 25th, and 26th. With special guests Nate Larkin and Scott Dente.
Yes.
Ooh, I like Scott.
And I've been leaning on Mondo. We might maybe get Mondo out there.
Oh, yes.
Maybe right. Around yeah. that time, maybe do a podcast from Studio B.
Oh, yeah.
Or Studio A, whatever. Yeah. Okay.
I love your excitement, Andy.
All right.
You're having a little...
You're like, yeah, that'd be great.
Oh, we're going to do it again?
No, we'll keep rolling. Don't edit it, but just give me another shot. Just tell me that you're bringing Mondo out again.
Oh, okay, ready?
Yeah.
So I've been leaning on Mondo, saying he ought to come with us out there and...
Oh, now hold on! Yes! That would be perfect! I can't believe we didn't think about that a long time
good.
Ago.
That's
all right.
What I'm talking
you
about.
You better
that's,
make it happen.
That's
okay.
What I'm talking about.
There we go. Just
all right, I'm spent. I'm exhausted. I'm going home. You guys finish this on your own.
And then, okay, so you did the pastor's conference.
Yeah, then jumped over to Ventura, where there was a Campus Crusade spring retreat happening. They took over a Marriott hotel on the beach.
In Ventura, great beach.
I've never been to a retreat or conference. Well, conference, yes. Retreat, no. Where 500 or so college students take over a hotel.
Mm.
And only one guest left at 2 in the morning, and that was addressed to the students the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
But they actually did great, and it was really fun. And I especially loved Saturday night just meeting with the couple hundred guys and watching them talk honestly with each other and carry each other's burdens. They carried each other's burdens, and it was just really deep and sweet. Watching some of those guys trust each other maybe for the first time, and they were really courageous in that.
You gave these guys an opportunity to kind of disclose more than they would normally disclose in a Christian meeting.
Yeah, we talked about secrets, and yeah. I would say when they especially when they got together in their groups, they really didn't have to go there, but mm-hmm. I think a lot of them were really honest with each other and trusted each other. So, without giving away too much of what was our time together, mm-hmm. and was one of those great sessions where it's not recorded, and
yeah.
you just love when they're not recorded, because you can just be there
right.
with people and not think about how this is going to translate 6 years from now, or
mm-hmm.
which tapes my kids will take into therapy to explain their dad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, he just. I can prove it. It's here. Look
this
what he
is
said
where
about
my
me.
Life changed.
it was really just an in the moment thing where I would say guys were really stepping up to that Jonathan kind of relationship where they were taking off their armor and giving each other something to hurt them with.
Yeah.
And trusting them with that. And then
awesome.
You watched courageous guys accepting that responsibility and loving each other through that.
That's beautiful.
So I was proud of them, and it was great and emotional. We were all emotionally spent, which is why everybody had to wait for me this morning to start this recording of the podcast as
yeah.
I slept through call time. So did you make it to a meeting this week?
As a matter of fact, I did. I did. Made it to the... I don't know what we're saying.
Yeah.
Yes, I did make it to the meeting.
Let me hear about your topic.
Okay.
It was a manly topic this week, right?
It was
chainsaws
or
beer swilling. What was it?
Well, actually, it was manly. The topic was beauty. And we need to take that topic back from the women. That was very good. I don't remember that beauty ever being named as the topic before, but...
Wow.
We had a great sharing time in our group. Where I took it was, I recalled how my years of active addiction in pornography dulled my sense of beauty, really blinded me to the beauty around me, and especially to the beauty of my wife. I'm married to a beautiful woman. She's beautiful outwardly. She's beautiful inwardly. She's this very just charming, special, beautiful woman. But for 20 years, I allowed pornographers in Southern California to define what is beautiful for me. I trained my brain to find this just, that their definition of beauty to make that beautiful. And as a result, I became almost indifferent to my wife's physical presence in a way that was deeply wounding to her. And in a way that stole really the life from our relationship for many, many years. I now understand, I'm grateful that I have regained my sight, that with the help of Brothers and Boundaries, cutting off access to that kind of really brainwashing and learning to be emotionally present. Actually with my wife to see and experience who she is. I now appreciate her beauty, and there are times when it just catches me by surprise. Just the other night, just two nights ago, sitting with her in McCreary's, all of a sudden the light caught her as she turned and smiled, and I told her she was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. Now, it's very important that my wife hear that from me, because it really doesn't mean as much coming from anybody else. I am the biggest mirror in her life. Mm-hmm. And in the years when I deprived her of that true reflection, I left her in doubt about her own beauty.
Mm-hmm. Now, was that the only way that guys, because that's a really important way, how we mm-hmm. see beauty. Especially in our mates.
Yeah.
Were there other ways that guys talked about beauty? I mean...
Yeah, sure. Sure. I mean... sexual acting out is very much disassociative behavior. You pretty much have to go away. You're not in your life, in the world. You're not sensing what's going on around you. You're not participating in life on life's terms. And as a result, you can pass all kinds of beauty and never even notice it, because you're living in a semi-conscious state. The truth is that even though we live in a fallen world, it still carries all the marks of its creator. It's still unbelievably beautiful. Life has its beautiful moments. One of the things that I love about Allie is that she has not lost her sense of beauty. It used to annoy me. But I couldn't go for a walk with my wife without her stopping every 3 seconds to take a picture.
I can verify that that is still the case.
Yes. And she doesn't mean, I always used to take, I would take the landscape picture, the big picture, the calendar picture. So I'd take one or two pictures a day, right? But Allie finds interest and beauty in the craziest things, a cluster of leaves against the bottom of against a house, or a dog, or a child, or a street person, or a shopping cart, it doesn't matter. What astonishes me, though, is to go back through her photographs and see how many beautiful images she has collected. And I'm finding that I am becoming more like her. We're becoming less efficient walkers. But we appreciate beauty a whole lot more.
So it's impressive to your friends, because you can say, well, we took a two-hour walk yesterday, but you've actually gone half the distance you used to.
That's right. That's right.
All right.
Well, but we've enjoyed it more.
I think that... Go ahead.
I say we have enjoyed it more.
You know what? That's the other part I can verify, is that watching you two from the back seat as we drove through the Smoky Mountains,
mm-hmm.
and how many times did she pull over the car to take a picture, and that you still had that little grin on your face as you rolled your eyes and just smiled as she had to get out to take a picture of a cluster of leaves or a shopping cart that, well, that's kind of weird in the Smoky Mountains, but you get the point.
Yeah.
Well, I think beauty is an amazing topic, actually, for guys, because it's one of those topics that gets us out of our standard thinking process, you know, mm-hmm. thinking about surrender or lust or, you know, those types of things. I think this makes us really think about who we are and the world around us. So, guys, consider it for your meetings, beauty, and we will be right back with our almost as special guest as the first. See, Mom's Trump. I'm going with it.
Chris is just Chris's bad timing. He just got to show up on the week that Mom is here.
It's not that he's not special. He's just not as special. That's all. That's all. We'll be right back.
Here I am standing. I am the evidence of what your love can do.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast, high atop the Mellow Mushroom. We are here with our, just as special as anybody else, you're special just like everybody else. Chris Simning. Chris has been a friend for a long time. He is a speaker all around the, well, especially around California, Arizona, but all over the country, right?
Yes.
So a national speaker who has been doing this for the better part of a decade and who has an amazing story. I especially love the first time I saw Chris speak, I had some of the most unruly youth. He was speaking to a high school camp, and they respected him so much that I've never heard a high school audience quieter during a guy's talk throughout the week, and they just fell in love with Chris. So, Chris Simning, here with us today from Arizona.
Welcome, Chris.
Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. It's good to be here this morning.
Now, Chris, I don't know how you even tell a thumbnail version of your story.
The Reader's Digest version?
Yeah, I don't know. Can you even do that? I hate to even have you. That's kind of...
It's a challenge, of course, because there's so much in my life that has taken place, but it is, I could try to do my best to give a nutshell version.
Yeah, Mondo can edit out what he feels is unimportant later.
Yes, there you go. And I know the Reader's Digest version, or the nutshell version, or the thumbnail version, I like that too. I know it will cause people to have more questions, so...
So give us the in-between, somewhere between the nutshell and the, Toyota pickup truck shell.
Toyota? Why is it always Toyota? Why can't it be
something else with a shell that was bigger? It was best I could come up with on short notice.
Yes, my life is a life of brokenness, and it has been an ongoing battle for me to live through life. When I was born, as we all are born, I was diagnosed with a mild case of CP, cerebral palsy, and it really did not affect much about me. I was high functioning. I could play sports. I could keep up with the best of them. The only thing that I struggled with was my fine motor skills, and so therefore I shook in my hands. And because I shook in my hands, I had to rely on what was then typewriters. And now we progressed to the good old laptop computer, and that's how I made it through my educational experience, typing my way through school. And nothing deterred me. I was a happy-go-lucky kid. And then in eighth grade, I went to bed one night, and I woke up the next morning, and of all days, it happened to be Easter Sunday. It also happened to be my mom and my stepfather's birthday, so it was a big day. For some reason, I woke up that morning, and I still remember that day like it was yesterday. I could hear the birds still chirp in my head. I could see the sunlight come through the blinds and like a spotlight over my waterbed. You know, waterbeds, particles of dust were shimmying in the sunlight, and I heard my mom come down the hallway, and I knew she would open that door to wake me up for the day. And sure enough, she did. And she closed the door behind her and kind of let me wake up on my own. And when I felt it was time for me to get up out of bed, I swung my legs over the bed frame, and when I stood to my feet, my head fell forward, and my chin was now touching my chest, and for whatever reason, I could not lift it back up. And I questioned, did I sleep wrong that night? Did something happen? I wasn't quite sure. It really did freak me out because I thought it would just go away, whatever it was. And I went down the hallway to see my family, have breakfast with them, and they noticed it, of course, and they asked me questions. And I answered them, I have no clue what this is, it'll go away. And my mom was hilarious because she thought I was just clowning around, and she would persistently tell me to hold my head up, and I could, of course, because I couldn't move it. And she thought I was being rebellious with what she was wanting me to do, that I wasn't being obedient, and she got a little bit angry. And at that point, I started to cry. My mom kept quiet and stepped back a little bit, because now she realized that I wasn't playing a game, that this was for real. And it started 2.5 months of absolute chaos. Going to doctors left and right, hospitals, medical procedures. For the longest time, they couldn't detect what this was. And 2.5 months later, I was diagnosed with an extremely rare neurological and muscular disease called torsional dystonia. And when I was diagnosed with it, the only information they could give me at that time was it could get better or it could get worse. And it got worse progressively. And from my 8th grade year of school to my senior year of high school, there wasn't a day that got better. Every day got progressively worse, and it affected the voice that you now hear. It affects the way that I walk. And my life was torn apart. It was ripped upside down. And I hated high school because I was just trying to survive. I became the bread of jokes and name-calling and people teasing me, and my life was just broken. And by the time I was a senior in high school, I was confined to a wheelchair. That's how bad it got. And I sat in that wheelchair for 5 years. The people had to dress me and bathe me and put me into bed every night, get me up out of bed every morning. And towards the end of my senior year of high school, an internalist from the UC Medical Center of San Francisco told my mom and my stepfather that this was it, and they needed to get ready because they're going to lose me. And so my mom was in the process of playing my memorial service, and the music was being played, being set in her head of what songs would be appropriate to celebrate my life. And everyone was ready for this ultimate demise of me. And it was hard because I never thought I would walk ever again. And God did something amazing in my life. And I consider my disability a blessing. I didn't see it then, but I see it now. And I started swimming, of all things. And swimming, I just got involved in swimming just to be with other disabled people. Wanted to be in that community just to relate to people who were struggling the way that I was. And I started out in a life jacket, and lo and behold, they retaught me how to swim like I could when I was a kid. And later I learned that when you're in water, you don't fight against the gravitational force of a pool. So it was very therapeutic, and I started to take steps in the water, and I started to walk again. And 2.5 years later, I'm out of that wheelchair. I'm walking around. I go on to get my college educations, and I felt like the Lord was calling me to be a speaker and to share this story with people. And I've been doing it for 10 years, and it is truly a gift. It does not mean that I don't struggle, because I struggle relentlessly still. But I firmly believe it is my life of brokenness that makes me yearn for God that much more. And I think it enriches my Christian faith, and it helps me to be the person that God wants me to be. And I realize that He expects me to struggle. He expects me to get angry at times. He expects me to be lonely and depressed and sad, which I am all those things at times. He expects that because I'm not perfect. I'm human. But it's an ongoing struggle that I have with my Creator. And I feel like my life is enriched because I'm allowed to walk through that journey of brokenness. And it makes me grateful for what I've been given. And it dumbfounds me to think that I am a speaker today when I thought I wouldn't be much of anything, because I was just trying to survive way back then. And I've been speaking now for over a decade, like I had mentioned, and I can't believe the path that my life has taken. It's been a tremendous joy.
And God just keeps changing things up, because just within the last month or so, Kirk Cameron has asked Chris to maybe come and talk to married couples with him and another guy, and that was another thing, like, what do you have to offer to married people? You're not married. And
yes,
through Kirk seeing that, no, God's not finished right, blowing down odd doors for where this ministry can go.
Yes. And it's interesting because, like what the Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians 1, 1 Corinthians 1, verses 27 through 29, Paul writes, God chooses the foolish things, the weak things, the despised things, the lowly things. Why does He do that? So no one has the right to boast before Him. This life is not about us. It's about what God wants to do in and through us.
Yeah.
So as I'm looking at those couple of verses, that has become my theme verse as a speaker. And we started a nonprofit organization called Obscure Ministries. Because God chooses the obscure things of your life to bring about a cure for your soul.
Amen.
And if you look at the word obscure, the last four letters of the word obscure spells the word cure. So in the midst of your brokenness, He cures you. He may not take it away, but he cures you from within for his glory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if the physical That's cure was awesome. The only thing, then stories of Jesus healing people would have ended with the healing, not with, hey, by the way,
yeah.
your sins are forgiven, buddy.
Yes, yeah.
You weren't cured yet. You could just walk. You're still messed up.
Yeah, the whole process of sanctification would be nullified if that was the case. And mm-hmm. because we still breathe, we're still being sanctified to this day. Because
yes.
if we are still breathing, that means that God's not done with us yet, and he wants us to continue to work in our lives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, should we take a break, and when we come back, we'll ask Chris some questions about this story that he's given, a good thumbnail version of a much longer story, but I think we've got the idea, so we'll be right back with questions for Chris Simning on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Hurt by the pavement starting over, picking up pieces on our road, and burned by the system we are under, giving up is all we've ever known. Hope is a word left undefined. When dreams get pushed aside, we are all wounded soldiers trying to get back on our feet. Don't even know the war is over, still searching for relief. When are we gonna open our eyes and see we've been redeemed? Wounded soldiers, wounded soldiers.
And we're back on the Pirate Monk Podcast. Crisp, I just cannot thank you enough for being here. I'm so moved by your story, and I so relate to it. My disability is not as visible as yours, but I feel every bit as broken as you do, and at the same time as grateful now for the brokenness. I have a question for you. I know that there are some Christians who are disturbed when I talk about being a recovering sex addict, and I apply that description of brokenness to myself. It doesn't describe me, but it does describe my situation and my behavior, my weakness, my brokenness. And I do encounter Christians who they're just not content without. They want to believe God, and they want me to believe God for a complete cure. Are you ever approached by people who are they're just unsatisfied and unhappy with any kind of progressive healing in you, and they want to pray for complete and total restoration?
For me?
Yeah.
Personally, yes.
Yeah.
And it really bothers me because one day somebody approached me with a phone call. She gave me a phone call, and it was a mother of a child who went to a camp that I spoke for.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me if I would want to go to a conference to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, do you realize that I am healed? And she goes, oh yeah, I get it, but you're complete healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if I was supposed to be completely healed, Jesus would have done that for me.
Mm.
I believe that God uses my brokenness to heal me already.
Yeah.
And, yes, I get that quite a bit. And it bothers me in the way that I know that these people have the best of intentions.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes me understand that these people really don't know me for who I am.
Yeah. And I wonder if they can't be comfortable with brokenness in my life, can they ever be comfortable with the brokenness in theirs?
That's a good question, Nate, because sometimes I feel like if somebody sees your brokenness or they see my brokenness, it makes them uncomfortable, because here they see two broken people, which means now they have to look at their lives to look at their brokenness, and they don't want to. And so maybe that's why people approach me to be completely restored, is because this whole idea of brokenness scares them so much that they will do whatever they can in their power to get rid of it and not see it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, the role of community early on was big for you. I mean, you didn't give a lot of the details of your high school stories, but I've heard a number of those, and if you want to get to the heart of every high schooler's worst nightmare of, you know, they have dreams of walking to school in your underwear. Well, why is that terrifying? Because everybody's looking at you and laughing. And you lived things that high schoolers can't even imagine to think of to be their worst nightmare. And yet, you found within that hope in community. So, once again, I think the theme of this is what you experienced externally, every man and woman experiences internally, and you become an amazing example that they might have trouble touching on. So can you talk about some of the role of community in your high school time?
You know what's interesting is I can't hide from this disability. I can do whatever I want to try to hide from it, but who am I fooling? It's obvious. People see it in me. So therefore, I can't hide from the thing that ails me, whereas other people can. They can easily hide behind whatever it is that they struggle with, and I can't. So, for instance, when I was really sick in high school, I'll just put it bluntly, I struggled with diarrhea. It was everywhere. It was all over me. It was soiled in my clothes. I had no control of those, and of when that took place. And it isolated me further from the high school norm, from the high school experience, because this whole disability plus the repercussions of what this disease brought made me feel that much more isolated, and I didn't feel lovable. I didn't feel like people could love me because I wasn't like them. And it took key figures in my life during my high school years to show me that that is not true. For instance, my best friend, his name is Ricky, we're childhood friends, we grew up since we were 8, we have known each other. And Ricky wasn't even a Christian at this moment. And when I got really sick, other people kind of left me behind. They weren't sure how to respond to me because I was different. It was awkward, it looked weird. Ricky never gave up on me. He would come over, he would get me in my wheelchair, he would push me around, he would carry me places where I couldn't go, and that was a lot of extra work. And the way that his actions showed love for me made me understand that, you know what, I am important to people. Angie is a beautiful girl. She was one of my pushers. I call her my pusher. Because I had pushers that would push me from class to class in high school in my senior year. And she pushed me from 5th to 6th period every day for the whole year. And one day, she is a beautiful girl. One day, she's pushing me to my 6th period class. And as she's pushing me, she says, I have a question I want to ask of you. And I'm like, sure, of course. Will you go to the prom with me? She could have picked anybody. And I said, no. And she said, why? And my wheelchair was my excuse. is he goes, I don't care about your wheelchair, I care about you. We'll make it work, Chris. We'll. You know how girls are? They have everything planned out before it even happens. Get it all figured out. She said, we're going to double date. My best friend and her boyfriend, we've already talked. And he would take care of things that I can't help you with. So we'll double date. Do you want to go? And I said, sure. Angie pushed my wheelchair on the dance floor. She did 360s with it. She popped wheelies with it. She rocked it back and forth. That's how we boogied. That's how we danced. And it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And she was a Christian, incredible, beautiful girl who could have any guy on campus she wanted. But she asked me. And that says a lot to me about character. And she overlooked the brokenness. She overlooked that because she was more mesmerized by the heart of me, even though I was a basket case at that point. Mm. I met Bill Cosby. Just he realized that I was sick, and he agreed to meet with me. And so there were key people in my life who just really poured of themselves unto me and showed me that even though you think this way about you, we think the opposite way. My youth pastor was huge.
Yeah, tell us about the houseboat trip, because that was huge in the community.
Oh my goodness. The houseboat trip is a staple story of service in my life. It's a senior trip. A senior trip was a houseboat trip on Lake Shasta.
Senior trip with the youth group?
Yeah, with my church youth group. On Lake Shasta, which is in Northern California, a beautiful lake. And I knew it was coming up. And my youth pastor asked me, hey, are you going to go? I'm like, no. He said, why not? I made a wheelchair. I'm not about to go on a houseboat trip to sit in a wheelchair on a boat and watch all my friends water ski and jet ski and have the time of their lives where I can't do any of that. No, I would rather stay home and watch television. You guys go have fun, take pictures, and show them to me. That was my attitude. He said, Chris, you are just as much part of this youth group as anybody else. If you don't go, it's not going to be the same. You need to come with us. We'll take care of everything. We'll dress you. We'll bathe you. We'll help you with whatever you need. So I went. It's the middle of the night one night on this trip, and my friend Jimmy and myself were sleeping in the kitchen area of this houseboat. And we're anchored to this cove during the night. And I wake up out of a deep sleep and I have this urge that I have to use the bathroom and I have to use it quick. And I mentioned that I struggled with diarrhea back then. And it just erupted like a volcano. And now I was oozing all over my body and into my sleeping bag, and it was gushy and warm and stinky and disgusting. And I just started to bawl. It was probably the loneliest I've ever felt in my life. And there was nothing I could do. I couldn't get up to walk. I needed the wheelchair, so I had to call for help. Good old Jimmy's in the room with me. Everybody's sleeping up on the deck outside upstairs because it's beautiful weather. And my youth pastor's sleeping up in the front of the boat. So at that point, it was just me and Jimmy. He was the only one closest. He was the one closest. And he called out his name. And he eventually woke up. And it took me forever to tell him what took place. It was embarrassing to let him know what happened, but I had to. Yeah, I was afraid with how he would respond because he was my peer. He was also a senior. And he gets up and he consoles me. And he says that it will be okay. And he'll be right back and he will go get our youth pastor. He goes to the front of the hospital and he wakes up our youth pastor and he tells him what happens. And Jimmy was told to go back to bed, that it would be taken care of, that he would do it, and Jimmy go back to sleep. But Jimmy told my youth pastor, "No way, Chris is one of my good friends. I can't possibly go to sleep with him struggling with this. I want to help you." So both Rich, my youth pastor, and Jimmy were in the wheelchair. And they scooped me up out of the filth, the mire, the muck. And at this point, diarrhea is seeping all over my legs. It's all over my sleeping bag. And they put me in the wheelchair just to go far enough to the little dinky bathroom that's on the houseboat. Not very big. But my wheelchair can't even fit through the door. So they set the brakes on the wheelchair, they pick me up, and they drag my lifeless frail body to the other end of the bathroom to the shower stall. They put me in, and I thought Rich, my youth pastor, was going to get in and clean me up as he would sometimes, because that happened before. But lo and behold, it was my friend Jimmy instead. He jumped in with me and he started to watch me. And as he's doing this, he's not saying a word to me. He's not even plugging his nose because the stitch was awful. He just watched me. And as Rich and Jimmy put me back in bed that night, they gave me a brand new sleeping bag. I forget where that came from, but they got rid of the old one. A brand new one. As they tucked me into the sleeping bag, they told me, "Thank you for letting us help you tonight." And it just stunned me. And I said, "I should be thanking you." And they said, "No, we need to be thanking you because what happened tonight was a privilege. And thank you for letting us do this for you." And that was a huge message to me about love and about people. And I think I'm a fighter today because I know that I'm loved. And my heart breaks for people with disabilities. My heart breaks for people who are broken or for people who are isolated because I want them to experience that safe life, but people are afraid to be themselves and admit their brokenness because they're afraid of rejection. And give people credit. Mm. People are people of love. And the more you tell, and the more you share, and the more you let yourself be who it is that you are, and more people are going to embrace you for what that is for your life.
As you talk about this, I just think there are guys listening to this who, because of their internal brokenness that they think is embarrassing, I don't want to be the guy in the wheelchair on the trip. They will not bring their brokenness into community because they think it'll be a burden for everybody else. And like you, they're saying, you said, "You guys have fun, just take pictures and show me." And I think there are broken guys who are sitting there saying, "You other Christians, go into community, have fun, take some pictures, and on the podcast, you tell me what it's like.
Mm.
I'll live vicariously through your broken stories." But I believe that just like you, bringing our full brokenness into the lives of other men, man, there are guys out there who have not yet given the gift of their full selves to the communities that God's prepared for them in advance.
Mm.
That's right.
Mm.
That's a great analogy. I never thought of it like that. because there are those people who are in the internal wheelchairs of their souls, and they're crippled because they feel like they can't move because they're afraid of, if they try to move, they're afraid of what those people would respond to them for or about. And I like that analogy because it expresses that we need to get up and walk.
We need to let the people around us. We need to give that as a gift.
And yes.
You could only see it as a burden for your friends,
yes,
saw it as a gift.
Yeah.
You were giving them.
And especially my peer, my youth pastor, I could see it as a burden for him, but it was more for Jimmy, who was my age. So I feel like it, with people in general, if it's in your peer group, you're more apt to be hidden.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Nate, you figure out how to follow up that.
Yeah.
You ask the question.
Man. Well, I just want to make the follow-up comment, I think, just to nail this for our listeners. In Samson, the key, kind of the heart of Samson life is the one-on-one relationships between men. And they thrive in a daily phone call between a man and his Silas. Typically, at the beginning of his Samson journey, a guy, and I know this was my story, he doesn't want to make that phone call, especially if he's failed or if he's floundering, because he feels as though he's going to be a burden, or that he's somehow going to inconvenience or disappoint the person he's calling. I tell guys over and over again, please call me. It's a gift for you to call me. Call me when you're in trouble. Helping you helps me. It's very difficult for any of us to believe that, but it's absolutely true. The great meetings, the great Samson meetings, are when guys show up and bring not just their strength but their weakness, and they hand their brokenness to the community and they say, "Can you help me carry this?" Mm-hmm. That's when it really comes alive. So let's not deprive one another of the gift of our brokenness.
Mm-hmm.
Let's tell the truth. It's been a great conversation.
Have a little something. My mother just asked me if she could say something.
Yeah, really quick.
And this is actually a very big deal.
Okay.
I'm very shocked that she wants to bring this up, because this is. I'll explain it. I'll let her talk about it.
Okay.
And then I'll explain what I mean.
Chris, I just wanted to thank you so much for your testimony. It's definitely been encouraging to me. I'm dealing with some brokenness myself. 29 years ago, I was diagnosed with MS. And it may not look like it on the outside, but I deal with it every day. And during the years, I can tell a difference, you know. However, the doctors told me a long time ago I probably would be in a wheelchair, but I'm not. Doesn't even look like I have MS, but I do fall more. I do, you know, a lot of things I used to do I can't do, so I just adjust. But your testimony really helped me, because I'm very particular. I think out of all those years, it might be 10 people in this world that even know that I have MS up until right now.
Right.
But you made me realize that, you know, I might not be a burden. People might just want to help me sometime, just to go get that for me, rather than me stumble and get it myself. So it was very encouraging, and I thank you so much for having me today, because it was just meant for me to hear your message. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's beautiful.
And see, that just goes to show right there that if you share with somebody your pain or your brokenness, the quintessence took place there.
That's right.
Exactly.
That person is willing to share theirs.
Yes.
It opens up the line of communication. So, for you to share that was huge. Thank you so much.
I'm glad that
you were on the show today as well, because I don't believe in coincidences at all.
No.
Divine appointments.
Yeah, for me, that's huge, because I remember the day... She had it for years before she told me. I remember vividly where I was. I was on the phone in college. I was a senior. I was in my bedroom by the window working on a paper. I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday. when she told me what she had, and then told me how long she had it. But she's notorious for that, you know, telling me, yeah, you know, I had a problem with this about last year. Did you know about that? You know, but I remember how I felt at that moment. I didn't know how to feel. You know, and I think a lot of it too is lack of education.
Yeah,
you really don't know what these terms mean. And you don't know really understand how to relate necessarily. But as time went on, and I saw her attitude. Now, even though you know she was very private about it. You know, very few people in our family know. You know, very few people, very private about it, this and that. But even in that confidentiality, so to speak, we her attitude has been remarkable. I mean, it reminds me a lot of Chris. I think Chris, you've as she said, encouraged her to be more vocal about it to those who may not know, family and close friends, because to this day, it's really been probably maybe 10 people.
Wow.
You know, but you would never know.
Yeah.
You know, so. So I thank you too, man. I really agree. It's, you know, divine appointment is definitely not a coincidence. And I was sitting here like, wow, this is trippy.
Yeah. You
know? Mondo, you've had a rough couple weeks now.
I know, man. I know. I know, man.
Another landmark.
And by rough,
day.
I mean glorious.
Yeah.
You know, Chris, another thing my doctor told me, I said, well, what's the difference in mean, you know, not being in a wheelchair, and once, you know, everybody that's rolling in here, and he said, your attitude. He said, having self-pity parties, and, you know, that has a lot to do with your well-being, you know. And so I try to stay encouraged, and I feel like I can do anything that I used to do, but it might be a little slower. It may take me can't do it today, but I'll do it tomorrow. But I have to believe in myself and in God, because if I don't, every once in a while you have a split second where for some reason all that just disappears for like quick second, and I can feel my body just shifting, going down that quick, and I'm like, oh no, you know. So I have to keep that and think like that and stay prayerful, and you know, I've asked God for a healing, and you know what? I believe that I am healed, because I'm not in a wheelchair. He didn't say that he'd make me like I was, you know, but I'm still able to take care of myself and everybody else, so I'm very thankful.
And can I just add this really quick? This came from my youth pastor, Rance. I'll never forget this. It's one of my favorite quotes. For some reason, I was really struggling one day, and he said this phrase that I will never forget. He said, Chris, you can choose to be bitter or you can choose to be better.
That's right.
And he said, what's the difference between those two words? One letter. In the word bitterness, the second letter is the letter I.
That's right.
If you are bitter, it's an I sin. So I would, if I were you, I would choose to be better in spite of it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Wow. That's beautiful.
It sure is.
Guys, fantastic. I think this is the deal. You don't have to just write in to talk about questions about protocol of Samson stuff, but this can be a chance for you to share some of your story to help other people hear your story so they can come out with theirs. Because, heck, we're going to run out of our stories. You know, we're probably already out and looping back around for a second or third round. So that's your chance to communicate to a lot of guys your stories, and you're seeing the power of it live right now. This is what it's all about.
And I just had a brainstorm. You know, you can write to us at letters@samsonsociety.org, or you can send us something by snail mail at box 224,
Franklin, Tennessee,
37065.
Has anyone done it yet? Because we're giving a prize out.
We are.
We're going to check this week. We're going to check this week.
Yeah, we haven't checked the mailbox. Okay, we will. But you can also record it right there on your laptop or on your phone. There's lots of ways that you can record your story. And you can email it to us at letters@samsonsociety.org. That's another way that you can share your brokenness, share your wisdom, experience, and hope.
Audibly.
Yeah.
Hear your voice.
Well, we're looking forward to hearing from you. We'll be back next week. This has been Nate, Aaron, and Mondo, special guests, Mom and Chris, on the Pirate Monk Podcast.